Hey yo, and here we go, another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. I am once again Mo, joined by the King of the Casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. Brett, how are you doing?
I am fantastic. Super fantastic.
Why is that?
Well, you know why? It's because we are talking to a gentleman that I've been following for years, a gentleman who is known very well for his guitar playing, also happens to be a fantastic singer. This gentleman has released a 50 for 50 for his 50th birthday. It is Richie Kotzen. Richie, how are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
Well, like I say, fantastic. We get a chance to talk to you. Oh, and happy belated birthday.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, February 3rd, I turned 50.
And to celebrate, you decided to do something that most people would consider insane.
Yeah, well, you know, I might be insane, so jury's still out. But yeah, I had recorded a bunch of music that would have been a normal record, and so I was planning on releasing something, you know, in 2020. And then I was on the road, and I'm traveling with this hard drive that kind of mirrored what was in my studio back in California, and I was listening to all these ideas, and I started like archiving them and commenting on them. And I was like, man, there's so much music here that I never finished. And so I thought, well, let me see how much of this I can finish when I get home. And then I started working. And then as I was finishing some of these ideas, I started writing all these new songs. And it was this kind of snowball that started happening. And before I knew it, I think I had like almost 30 compositions like completely recorded. And I mean, some of them were things that, you know, I had previously recorded in the past, but a lot of new stuff was happening. And so I thought, man, if I could get to 50 songs between now and the time that I turned 50, maybe I could put a new record out and I could call it 50 for 50. And you know, this was all in my head. It's just, you know, something fun to do. And then, you know, as time went on, I started getting closer and closer. And then finally, you know, I got to 50 and I'm like, there I am. I can do it. I mean, I probably could have gone to 60 or 70, but then I probably would be like in one of those padded rooms, you know, with a straitjacket. So I stopped at 50 just for my mental health. And now here we are.
So in other words, when you get on to turning 75 or 100, then you'll be ready for that, right?
100 for 100. I'm looking forward to it.
I have to be honest. When I finished the last song, I was like, I never want to get near a recording studio again. You know, that was my mentality. I was like, I turned all the equipment off, because usually in my studio, I leave everything on 24 hours a day, because I never know when I'm going to have an idea. And everything is always mic'd up. You know, the drums stay mic'd up. Everything, the signal path for everything stays. And so when I hit the 50th song, I turned everything off and I just stayed out of that corridor of the house for like a good, you know, couple of weeks.
So then after that, how many songs have you written since then? Because you're quite prolific.
Actually, believe it or not, I'm working on something. I'm not supposed to say what I'm doing right now, but I mean, if you look at my Instagram, it's pretty obvious what I'm doing, but I'm writing another album right now.
that's amazing. You know,
I'm getting help though. This time I'm getting help.
Oh, okay. I think that's a pretty strong hint. But you know, I really think this is a really remarkable achievement. Remarkable on the quality. I mean, when I heard 50 songs, I thought, okay, how many are going to be filler? And a zero being the answer. I mean, I'm used to one or two songs being filler on a 12 track album. 50 tracks, no filler, is all quality. Is, I mean, it's a remarkable, like I say, a remarkable achievement.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. The only criteria, and thank you for that compliment, but the only criteria that I have when I work is if I like it, because that's the only thing I can really, you know, I can really get gaze. And believe me, I don't like everything that I do. I'm pretty much my worst critic. But in the end, if I create something and I find myself listening to it over and over again, and I'm not tempted to, you know, add something or subtract something or tweak something, I know it's finished. And then I move on, and that's my criteria, because otherwise you kind of make yourself insane, like, you know, worrying about how something will be received or perceived or what have you. So that's really, you know, if I like it, I'll share it with my people that care about what I do. And if I don't, you know, then it'll just sit on a drive until it's ready.
One of the things that's interesting is I know that the genesis of these songs came from different time periods, and yet I can't imagine them not all being released now in this format, all 50 together. But there is three CDs, and the three CDs have slightly different personalities. Could you kind of describe from your perspective the slightly different personalities of the three CDs while they still all tie in together?
Well, I have to be honest, I don't look at this as three separate things. And it's interesting to hear you perceive it that way, which is completely valid because that's how you're hearing it. I think that the reality is that there's songs on here that are super new. Songs like Innocuous, Black Mark, really, you know, just months old. And then there's songs like More Than This and Already Scarred that have been floating around, completed since early 2000s. And then there's stuff all the way in between, other things that are new, semi-new, other things that are ideas that were started 10 years ago that were never finished. So it's just a real broad scope of music over the course of time. And, you know, the one thing I can comment to is the fact that some of these songs, like, for example, the song Mountains, one of my favorite songs, it ended up on the third disc. That's just where it ended up. And I'll talk about sequencing later because that was the most maddening element of all this. But that melody and that lyric has been floating around in my head for years, and I could never figure out how to tie it all together lyrically with the story. And then finally I went down there one day, and I say down there, I mean the studio because it's downstairs, and I it all came together. And it turned out to be one of my favorite songs. And so, you know, the point is some of these ideas kind of live with you for years. You know, they come in and out, and then they just finish themselves one day. You don't know how or why. And then other songs like Black Mark, I was talking about on another interview, just came to me like instantly. And I ran downstairs. I set a click track up. I jumped behind the drums, and I imagined the band was playing with me. So when I cut that, I didn't have any reference other than the click track to stay in time. And then I jumped on the drums and recorded the drum track, and then I went and started overdubbing. So that song is probably one of the newest songs on the record, and you can actually hear the drum track. It's a one-take drum track that I just went in and played. So, you know, all these things come in different ways. And so I did not necessarily sequence it as three separate records representing anything. It's just, you know, literally just a broad collection of music.
Yeah, because I know we're fascinated about the concept of like the sequencing and how long it would take you to choose which goes where when you think about it as 50 songs. I mean, it's one thing to think about it as three separate CDs, but to think about it as 50 songs and to put those in a row, that's completely different beast.
Yeah, that was tricky because the other element, it's not just like sequencing it, you know, in a way you like it. You're looking at a situation where it's 50 songs that have to fit on three CDs. So like initially I'd do a sequence and then I'd have 10 minutes like empty on the first disc. And then I'd like have to abandon that or move things around. And then, you know, just to get it right, to get it to fit properly was a little bit of a puzzle element. And like in the very beginning, like when I had like the first 27 songs, I remember I was trying to sequence that. And I'd like keep putting stuff towards the top, and I'd listen to some, oh no, I love that song. That's got to be up close, you know, or Nickel Hustler, that should be first. You know, I didn't, you know what I mean? It was like getting crazy. I kept changing it. And then I committed to the opening song and the closing song. And that kind of made it a little easy for me. And then I had the other concept of once I had the opening song, Stick the Knife, for the record, I thought, well, it's three discs. Maybe I should open each disc with a heavier, more guitar-oriented rocker. And that's kind of what I did. So, like, if you notice this one, it's Stick the Knife and As You Are, which are two heavier songs. And then the next disc, it's two kind of heavier rock songs. And then the same thing with the last disc. And so they're kind of sequenced similar in that sense. I think the first disc is more front-loaded with some of the funkier stuff, like Life's Gonna Give It to You, and I don't have all the titles in my head, but I know there's some funkier stuff.
Dirty Tricks is pretty funky.
Yeah, exactly. Nickel Hustler, Dirty Tricks. Right. So that first disc, I think, explores more of the kind of, you know, Bernie Worrell, Bootsy Collins side of you know, me being a fan of Parliament. You know, it kind of goes more in that direction. And then I think somewhere like on the second or third disc, there's more of a kind of singer-songwriter attitude. You know, I think there's a song called Pray For Me, which is actually really cool, something to talk about. I don't mean to ramble, but I'm remembering stuff. That song was recorded, the bulk of it, in a hotel room. And I didn't have a drum set. And so the percussion is me banging on a desk. overdubbing that. And so the first verse, I'm singing into a really cheap microphone, and it's the original first vocal. And then the second verse, I never wrote it, and so that was new. So I came, when I was home, I sang it through my Neumann, which is an old microphone from 1975. So if you listen to that track, go back and listen to it. There's some fun trivia. You'll hear the percussion is me banging on a desk in a hotel room, and all the guitars are recorded direct in the hotel room. The voice, the first verse, is in the hotel room. And then when the second verse and second chorus come, you'll probably notice the vocal is more present. And that's because I'm singing through, you know, a very expensive vintage microphone about a year later. So that's kind of some interesting trivia.
It's fascinating to think that you would be able to take all these disparate elements and kind of form them into really cohesive songs and be able to do it from a hotel room to your house. And I can only imagine how many different locations there were for this album.
Yeah. Well, you know, and spread out over the course of time, you know, there's songs that were recorded in the old house that I used to live in. There's songs that were recorded in a recording studio that I used to own in North Hollywood, and partially recorded there, partially recorded, you know, at my new place. You know, so it's very interesting. But now with technology, I mean, I'm here in Turks and Caicos in the Caribbean, working, you know, making a recording, and you can just do it anywhere. It's just really, really cool.
Speaking of technology, the fact that I know there's obviously physical discs available, but the distribution of this in today's world with digital media actually seems to me like, I know a lot of people lament the loss of the physical media, but it actually seems to me like a huge advantage for this CD and this album.
Well, yeah, initially I wasn't going to bother making physical copy because I didn't know if I was going to get done in time to actually manufacture, because, you know, it takes time when you get involved in the artwork, and then, you know, making the files so that they can be, you know, turned into physical discs, and, you know, it takes time to print them up. And so somebody that I worked with was like, no, you have to do it, you have to have physical, and it's important. And so I did it, and I had the timing, and it all worked out. But you know, one of the things that's cool, actually, is people can make their own playlist. So now you have 50 songs. You know, I sequenced it the way I thought it, you know, made the best presentation. And my intent was for someone to listen in the order that I'm presenting it. But you don't have to. I mean, if something sticks out, you know, you can make your own sequence. And you know, I think it's a lot of material. I don't think you have to listen to it all at once. And there's nothing wrong with having some favorite songs and making a specific playlist with only those songs.
And one of the things also that's interesting to me when you have 50 songs is, how do you know when to do a song that is purely instrumental? How do you know that song shouldn't have lyrics, should have no voices, as Brian Wilson told us in concert when we saw him play Pet Sounds, that some songs have?
Well, you know, for me, it's usually obvious that something's going to be instrumental because I don't have any idea for lyrics. So, you know,
that makes it easy.
Sometimes by nature of the part, like, you know, I think there's three instrumental songs on the record. And there's one that's just so strange. I think it's called 4th of July 14th or something like that. And the reason it's called that is that when I found it on the hard drive, that's what it was called, probably because that was the day that I recorded the idea. So it just was obvious to me that that's going to be an instrumental, you know. I don't know. I guess it's just, I don't put much thought into it. I really don't know. They just kind of come out that way. And some things seem like they need, you know, a lot of times I come up with lyrics right away. Like I'll have a catch phrase, you know, and I'll write around that. So it's just all different. I mean, I just don't have an answer for how I write, because it's always a different approach.
Is naming instrumental songs more difficult?
Oh God, yeah, because, you know, what are you supposed to call these things? I remember on my first record, I had some of the most ridiculous names, and to the point where, you know, I found it very aggravating that I had to name these songs that didn't have lyrics. And those songs in particular on the first record were like crazy songs. I mean, like, I remember Steve Smith, who was the drummer, trying to make charts, and he's like, I don't know how to chart this, because what you're playing, it sounds like you're just playing this part, and it sounds like the time is shifting. And I said, yeah, I said, it is shifting. I said, it's just a feel thing. I had these weird transitions that were not based on anything other than just something that was in my mind. And so it was almost impossible to make charts for. And so imagine trying to name something like that. So, you know, I very quickly became disenchanted with the idea of instrumental music. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to write a song, I need to be able to sing it. And then I could, at least then I can name it.
I actually thought that just having a record on Shrapnel in the early days meant that you had to name songs something weird.
Yeah, right. I mean, to me, also getting on Shrapnel back then, like that was like, you know, a huge honor to get involved in that camp. I mean, because, you know, Mike Varney, who those people who don't know, was the president and basically, you know, the label. You know, he is the label. Was discovering all these amazing guitar players. So to get, you know, acknowledged by him in the reader's column in Guitar Player Magazine, which was called Spotlight, that's how he found all these guys. But then to get signed to the label was, you know, just like something out of a fairy tale, at least for me. And so that was my first introduction to, you know, going in and making a record that was going to be released globally. So, but, you know, I've come a long way since then. I mean, I was just a teenager, you know, shredding like a lunatic on the guitar. And now I'm still a lunatic putting out 50 songs at one time.
Well, yeah, Fever Dream is actually where I first heard you. And so I know that you had said one time in an interview when you joined Poison that like people wouldn't know who you are. And I was like, we were crazy excited. It was just like, sweet, Richie Kotzen joined Poison, you know.
Yeah, that was a fun time. You know, what a lot of people don't know is at the time I joined that band, I was signed to Interscope, and Interscope had bought my recording contract from Shrapnel. And so, and it was based on that Fever Dream record. And part of my deal was I needed to deliver a third record to Shrapnel. So we all agreed that that would be an instrumental record, because they did not want me to make a vocal record to compete with what would have been the Interscope album. And uh-huh. So I very quickly made a record called Electric Toy. It was supposed to be called Electric Toy, and for some reason they wouldn't let me call it that. So it was sadly named Electric Joy, which I, to this day, is embarrassed of. But I delivered that record to Shrapnel, and off I went to Los Angeles. And then I just started spending a lot of time writing and co-writing, and I just became obsessed with, you know, writing songs for my record. And then sadly, I never made the record. We had a producer lined up, Danny Korchmar, who had just done the and End of the Innocence by Don Henley. He worked on that record, and I was a huge fan of that album, and my music was moving very much in that direction. And then at the last minute, the label said, listen, we didn't sign you to be a pop act. We want you to make a hard rock, heavy metal record. And I just was so far beyond that at that time in my mind. I was like, well, you know, I don't sing like that. I don't play that way. It's not in my heart. I want to do this kind of more soulful thing, listen to the music that I've been writing. Ironically, Stand was one of the songs that I had written back then, which was a very much of a, you know, kind of more of a soulful, gospel-y kind of song. And so anyway, the point is Interscope dropped me. We couldn't agree on anything, and they released me from my contract. But they told me at the same time that Bret Michaels was calling from Poison and wanted to meet with me. And so I went out to his house, and we really hit it off. And I ended up playing them the song Stand, which ended up on the record. And we had the South Central Choir sang on it. So it was a very interesting time. But I think a lot of people don't know the backstory of what was going on in my life. You know, I remember being at Jimmy Iovine's house in Malibu, you know, long before Poison, before I thought I was going to be in Poison, you know, playing football in the front yard with Bruce Springsteen. So it was, and I was 20 years old. So it was a very interesting time.
I just want to delve into that so much deeper now, but yes, there's just so much to get there too. But back to the album, because that is with our short time with you, what we're booked to talk about, and we certainly love the album. And I'm very curious, would you consider just one time playing a show where you performed all 50 songs in order to just one time, just to challenge yourself, just to do it and say it was out there?
No, I wouldn't, because you know when I how fast I answer that. You know, it's interesting for me, like, because music. Here's the thing: there are people that constantly think about live. That when they think, oh, how am I going to do that live? Oh, I better not do that. Well, don't put an organ on the song because there's no organ player in the band. And what happens is what you're doing is you're putting a wet blanket on your creativity. So, for me, I've always been the kind of person where if I hear, you know, a kazoo and it needs to happen in the third chorus because it's going to advance the song and create a cool vibe, I'm going to put a kazoo in there, you know, or what have you. And I'm always in the moment of the composition. What does this song, what do I hear here? What can I do? Do I hear a mellotron part, or, you know, you need to have a violin patch in this one section, and do those things. So you get the best, truest creative, you know, representation of what you're feeling and hearing. Then once the thing is done, once it exists, then you can look at it and decide and talk about live. You know, is it good? And then, like, I have songs that I play live as a power trio that take on a whole new life. You know, in the studio, they have different overdubs and backgrounds and this and that. Live, if the song is great and strong, you can sit there with an acoustic guitar and deliver the song. But where I'm going with this is that you asked about playing all 50 songs. No, because not all of those songs, I don't think I need to perform all those songs. I think those songs needed to be created and recorded for me in my own personal, you know, crazy head. But I don't feel like I need to go out and perform all of them. I don't feel like I need to do that. So the way it's going to work is I would pick certain songs that I think are going to be fun to play live as a power trio and translate well, and then I'm going to mix them in with the other songs that people expect me to play. Like, you know, the song Remember is a song that, you know, a song of mine that people always seem to expect me to play, or You Can't Save Me. You know, so we'll have those songs will be in the set, but we'll add a few new ones, you know, and I think that's kind of what most acts do. I don't know. To actually go out and play the entire new record, I think the fans always like hearing songs that they're familiar with.
Well, it'll have to be on your 100th birthday that you go out and play the entirety of the 50, because that's the way it works.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking as a regular tour. I was thinking as a one-time special event, because I think,
The work that I guess, you know, the real answer is I'm too damn lazy. You know, it was so much hard work to make this thing exist the way I heard it in my head and to get there. And I think it would be even more difficult for me to go back and relearn, you know, because when I record and write something, it's like I've documented and then it, you know, I forget about it. And people come up to me and say, oh, your song, My Addiction, is one of my favorite songs you ever wrote. And I'm like, really? I have a song called My Addiction? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, I did that in 1999, you know? So, yeah, that's how it works.
I guess that's what happens when you have, you know, 20 plus solo or 20 out solo albums and, you know, yeah, what is it, 22 solo albums now? And I think, is it, or is it?
And, you know, it, I think it is. I get confused because I have another record that's called Wilson Hawk that really, it's a collaborative record between me and my friend Richie Zito. But then in some, you know, regard, it still kind of falls under the Richie Kotzen thing as far as, you know, I'm singing, I'm writing and playing, blah, blah, blah. And then there's, you know, the records I did with Greg Howe, they're not necessarily solo records, but you know, there's so many records out there that I, like I said, I think I lose track of what I've done.
Well, go ahead, Brett.
No, I was just saying easy to understand how you could lose track. So,
yeah, exactly. How do you remember the lyrics from all those? So is there, you know, obviously, there's a band you're a part of. This is a super group that we may or may not, and I suspect may be getting new music from. But is there any other band that if you could form a super group with somebody, who would you form a super group with that you haven't played with?
Well, you know, I don't necessarily think in those terms. You know, I got to say, you know, the Winery Dogs is such a fun thing, and people were so responsive to that. I really loved what we did with, you know, me and Billy and Mike. You know, they call it a super group, I guess, because we all have, you know, we're known guys, you know, we're known musicians that have done things. But and that was, you know, just really an interesting thing. I remember coming off the tour for 24 hours back in 2011, I guess it was. And I had said to one of my friends, you know, I'd really like to do something where I can, it's not only about me. And you know, because I just wanted to just kind of escape myself a little bit. And no sooner did I say that out loud, suddenly the Winery Dogs came along and was very well received. So I don't think I'm sitting around, you know, dreaming of yet another super group. I think as far as super groups go, or, you know, when you talk about what that means, I think the Winery Dogs represent Richie Kotzen's, you know, throw at a super group. I am collaborating on new music with, you know, like I said earlier, I mean, if you look at my Instagram, it's pretty obvious what I'm doing. I wouldn't call that a super group. I would call that, you know, a couple of guys getting together, having some fun, writing some music, and hopefully releasing it and sharing it with people. But, you know, I have to say, I'm very happy and very content with the way things are. You know, I have a lot of flexibility, a lot of freedom. You know, I own the masters to 13 of my records. I can tour when I really want to tour. If I want to take 6 months off, I can. So I just want to kind of preserve and maintain the position that I'm in, and of course, you know, continue to write and play music.
Well, and of course, you can film your own videos now too. So there's that even.
Well, I'll tell you that was so much fun. Now you brought up the video. We did a video for Devil's Hand, and this was the first time. Now, in the past, I've kind of directed some videos of my own. You know, shot them on my iPhone, and or some of the other videos that I've done more professionally. I contributed a lot of the ideas, but this is the first video where I literally sat down and storyboarded scene for scene, you know, something to fit the song. You know, I'm talking about Devil's Hand, and that was really a lot of fun. You know, we had to shoot that video over the course of 3 different days because I initially, the main character was just kind of beat up, clearly homeless, down and out kind of guy. And then once we shot all that, I shaved and cleaned up to do the part of the video where it's flashback to a happier time. And then the third part, which I don't know if people even realize, because it's a long video and I would imagine half of them probably give up. But if you watch the whole video, the character goes through a transformation and he comes out of a public bathroom and he's back, you know, to his old self, or at least how he imagined himself. And he walks into a jazz bar and just brings the house down with a ripping guitar solo. And then at the very end, you know, it flashes to him waking up in the van. So you don't really know if it happened or if he was imagining it or what. And so that was kind of the video. Boy, it was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to doing the next one.
Well, and I love that where you come out of the bathroom and get in and just climb onto the stage. That is one of my favorite parts of the video.
So you did watch it. Good. Thank you.
Oh, totally.
It's my favorite part of the video, too. I loved watching you play. And yeah, it was really cool. Do you know what the next video will be? I'm putting my vote out for Wide Open just because that's probably my favorite track. But
wow. Yeah, that's really interesting. Let me ask you, both of you, what if you were going to do a second video, what would you choose?
That would be my choice. I just really dig that song, and I think that visually it would be really interesting to interpret.
Yeah, there you go. And what else?
Well, you know, I love the song "Innocuous." It's one of my favorites. I don't know about a video. I think I'd love to see. Yeah, actually, you know, I think "Go Fast" might be something that I would. Oh, "So Fast" would be something that I would consider.
Interesting. You know, it's funny. That's the one song on the record that my wife was begging me to not put on the record. And I'm like, why? She goes, it's weird. I'm like, what do you mean it's weird? She goes, your voice sounds weird. And so I went back to the studio and I was doing, I don't know, you can go back and listen to it. You'll hear it. I was doing these background vocals because she had already heard the song without the background voices. And so I was overdubbing the background vocals. At the very end, I'll do this kind of silly, like, la, 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 la. It's kind of a fun, silly thing. I'm just fucking around. And at one point, I start laughing, like, kind of hysterically while I'm singing because I'm thinking of Julia and her Brazilian accent begging me to not put this song on my record. And so I started laughing while I was cutting the vocal, and you can actually hear it on there. I left it on the song. Go back and listen to it, and at the very end, you'll hear me start to laugh, and that's why I was laughing.
You know, I also love Mad Bazaar, but I don't think I'm not sure it would make a good single. I'm not sure it's proper for a single, but that's one of my favorite tracks too.
I love that song, and that's another one that has been floating around in my head for I don't know how many years, and I had so many different incarnations. One version with a drum machine, one with live drums. And, you know, I finally came to the version that's on the record. I really like that track a lot.
Well, you know, I mean, obviously we could sit here and discuss it with you forever, but I think technically if that's all the time that we were booked with for you. You're such a fascinating guy. Thank you so much for being so honest and, well, making this record, making all the music you make, and hopefully we're in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. So hopefully someday you get up here and we get a chance to see you live.
That would be excellent. And thank you for talking with me. And I guess have a great evening.
Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you so much, Richie Kotzen, 50 for 50. We hope you get to 100, and we hope everybody listens to all 50 songs multiple times and goes and buys it. Because
I'll be honest. I hope I get to 100 more than I hope you get to 100, to be honest with you.
Right on. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you. All right.
Bye.
Bye now.
I should have listened to my mother. She told me, kid, don't push your luck. Your woman's gonna leave you. Threw everything away. Tell me who I am. Oh, open up my eyes. It was all a dream. I was strong and lean. I lost all my inspiration to the devil's hand. I was all for her. She was all. All her right. my mind to waste. No, I don't want to feel you. It's a lesson I've been served. If only I could go back and relive those years. But it was all a dream. I was strong and mean. I lost all my inspiration to the devil's hand. I was all for her, she was all for me. I lost all her adoration to another man that she don't know. She don't know. Thank you.